So it is really good to be back with you again. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking from Galatians chapter 6. We'll go a few other places before then, but I want us to spend a few minutes talking about, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those of the household of faith. Verse 9, before that in Galatians 6, verse 9, says that we are not to grow weary while doing just that. It is easy to get tired of doing what is good. I'm glad you want to do what's good and you're here tonight, because that is exactly what you want to do. You wouldn't be here if you didn't want to do what is good. But I recognize fully that it can get tiring. And I want to spend a few minutes this evening talking about doing good from the perspective of challenging us to continue in areas and in times and with people who, well, the world is not interested in doing good. And sometimes we can feel lonely in doing what's good. We can feel the number of people who want to really do what is good is shrinking. Or at least that we are pulling to do what is good, and it seems like fewer people are pulling or interested in, you know, doing it with us. And so I want to spend some time talking about that, to encourage us that, I said this morning, it's good to do good. Whether you're doing it by yourself, whether we're doing it in a large group of people, whether it's appreciated, whether it's not appreciated, when we're done, we want to hear our Lord say, "Well done," because we're good and faithful servants. And whether we have been placed over a little or whether we've been placed over a lot, it's not the point. The point is, at the end of the day, we want to be able to have confidence that we've done what is good. You know, what's interesting to me is that Jesus talked about doing what is good from very unexpected perspective. In other words, we might expect him to just say, you know, go out there and do what is good. After all, that's what he did. But I want to suggest to you that in not growing weary in doing what is good, Jesus said, listen, it's going to be in an unexpected way. So, in other words, it's going to be doing what is good to unexpected people. And it wouldn't take much thinking in this group for us to come up with some unexpected people that Jesus would have us do good to. In Luke chapter 6, in verse 33, Jesus said, "And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same thing. And if you lend to those from whom you expect or you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners and receive back as much. But here it comes. But love your enemies. Do good and lend, hoping for nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you will be the sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the unthankful and the evil. Therefore, be merciful, just as your Father is merciful." The challenge that's before us is to do good, and to do good all the time. To be the kind of people that don't ask who, but ask, what can we do? There was a show on TV, I don't know if it's going to make it or not on TV. Usually the show series that come on that that Robin and I start to like get canceled. Okay, it's kind of the death knell. I think the networks would be writing us and saying, don't like our shows anymore, because they wind up not being real popular. And there's a doctor, and his famous line throughout the show so far is, how can I help? How can I help? And often it's unexpected people. It's not the people who you would normally help, and he wants to help those people. I like the heart that we see in him. And so Jesus is the famous love your enemies verse here in Luke chapter 6. And a lot of times we kind of stop and wander off into that without help understanding that when he breaks that down, it's do good. So it's not just something in our hearts. It's not just, you know, I'm not hating on anybody. But it's actually, it's, you know, doing good. It has to do with who we're willing to lend, you know, our lawnmower to, and who we're willing to lend our mixer to, and who we're willing to lend our car to, and what we expect in thanks and repayment. And he's not saying that you know that they shouldn't give it back, but sometimes we want extra credit, and so we won't lend to, we won't help, we won't do good to people who can't return the good, who can't respond in kind. Hey, I did good to you, now you need to do good to me. Or that we only do good, how does he say it earlier? Do good to those who do good to us, or love people who love us. The lovable are easy to love, and the world loves those kind of people. The people who are giving us gifts and loaning things to us and just giving us stuff, it's easy to give them stuff. Even the world does that. In what way, in doing good, do we surpass the world? Now, I'm not talking about amounts. You know, the world maybe has more money than we do, and they can, I don't know, give out of their excess more than we can. That's what we're talking about. But there's this person here who needs help, and the first thing that I think about is myself. He said, well, that's the way the world is. He's saying, if we're going to do good, then we're going to do good in at times that it's unexpected. Maybe with undesirable people. Undesirable people. So in Galatians 6, our verse is, so as we have opportunity, do good to all, especially those of the household of faith. The challenge is that as we have opportunity, it's not going to be a question of, is this a desirable person or not? Is this a person that's going to be able to help me and contribute or not? This is going to be between me and God. It's about doing good, trying to do good, and in unexpected situations. I suspect that we could, like I said with the people, we could think of some situations where doing good would be unexpected. That, as the world goes, that you wouldn't be expected to help, because you weren't required to help. Over in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21, for this cause you were called, because Christ, who suffered for us, left us an example that you should follow in his steps. What kind of example does he set? Well, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. Okay, so he lived a perfect life. But listen to what it says. Verse 23. Who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to God who judges righteously. He didn't respond in kind. When somebody curses us and we bless, when we could, you know, condemn them, when they deserve being judged and we don't, when we respond in a positive way, When we do good instead of doing the evil that they do. He said, you're being like Jesus. He set an example. This is one of those stop and count 10 kind of situations. Where somebody does something against us, doesn't do good. And we have to stop from doing evil toward them. I say, well, they deserve it. This is not about whether they deserve it or not. When Jesus was reviled, when Jesus was cursed, the people that were doing that to him deserved the same thing. And here's what he said. I commit judgment to the Father. I'm not sure Jesus even trusted himself in that situation to take matters into his own hands. In the heat of the moment, we need to step back and we need to say, in this situation, as bad as it is, I'm going to look for good to do. And sometimes when somebody is cussing you out, somebody is mistreating you, sometimes the best thing that we can do is say, I wish you well. God bless you. And leave. And walk away. It's hard. But it's those kind of situations that the Lord is saying, do good. Not just the situation where it's easy to do good. It's easy to do good in this group right here. Anybody tempted to do something horrible, evil right now? We say, no, we're all around good people. We're here for a good purpose. God's word's being read. We've been singing songs to uplift each other. We're praying for each other. This is all good, right? But what happens when we get outside of here? In a situation, what can't be expected in that situation to do good? And he says, yes, especially in that situation. It's those situations that we're really showing what we're made of. It's in those situations that we really believe that what he said in Galatians 6, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all. That's what he's calling us to. And let me add one more thing in this, and that is that he's calling on us to do good as defined by God. Not as defined by my feelings in the moment, because it might seem like the best thing to kick you in the pants at this particular moment, that would be a good thing for you, but not as defined by God. So we need to not define good in terms of what the world expects, the world's level of what is good, because that's pretty low. Let's just say that's pretty low. What the world calls good is oftentimes evil. Let alone not the best. So I'm asking that we pause in life situation and ask ourselves, what in the eyes of God, not in my own eyes, not in the eyes of my culture, not in the eyes of the law, but in the eyes of God is good. What is the good thing? Now, I can't provide you a list because in every situation we're going to say what's the good thing for marriage or good thing for raising my kids or good thing to do as a citizen. What is the good thing in this situation? We're going to have to do a deep dive on these things and try to find out what is the will of God on these things. Which is why as churches and in our Bible studies we're doing all kinds of things about what is good in the eyes of God. One time somebody asked me, I think we were studying about homosexuality and the will of God on that. And they said, well, how many homosexuals do you think you have in the crowd at this moment? I said, I don't know. Was that a particular problem that... I said, well, I don't know that it is. Well, why are you preaching about it if you're not sure that this is that your audience is having a problem with this? And I said, because we need to know what is good in the eyes of God. On all topics. We need to know. We want to know what, before we're this deep in some problem, before I'm deeply involved in some kind of sin or some kind of relationship, and then after the fact, ask God what is good. That's not what we want. And so on all topics, we go to God and we say, what is good? What you say is good. Not defined by me, by my culture, not defined by the church. So go back to Galatians chapter 6 with me. I'll spend a couple more minutes in that and we'll finish our lesson. Because a lot of times we read verses 9 and 10 without realizing that they're there for a purpose. So read 9 and 10 again. He says, "Let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those of the household of faith." Don't grow weary in doing good. Here we go. But a lot of times we don't realize that he has challenged them. He's challenging us in several areas here. This is a summary. This is a conclusion. Hey, I've challenged you. Now let's get out there and really, really do what is good. So let's back up. Let's back all the way up to verse 1. "Brethren, if any man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted." Now, why would anybody grow weary in well-doing when it comes to restoring a brother who's overtaken in a fault? Well, that's because it's not pleasant. Because restoring somebody is kind of challenging. First of all, he's overtaken in some trespass, and I've got to go tell him that he is in the trespass, or at the very least, I got to tell him that I know about it. And there's all this, "What are you judging me? You know what? Do you think you're perfect? Do you think you know everything?" All this kind of stuff that can be thrown back at us. This is going to be tough. But a person who is spiritual, a person who's looking at things from a spiritual perspective, is not most concerned about the physical stuff. And the stuff I listed to you earlier, you know, who do you think you are? You think you know everything? That's all just a smokescreen. That's a physical attack on a spiritual subject. One time I preached, I was very young, I preached on smoking, I think it was. Somebody asked that I speak on smoking. So I preached on it. And this guy made a beeline for me afterwards. And he stood in my face and was thumping on my chest. And he said to me, "Were you aiming that lesson right at me?" I knew he was a smoker. And somehow, providentially, I suppose, I didn't freeze up. I said, "Well, did you need it?" He hung his head and he said, "Yes." And I said, "Okay," then I aimed it right at you. God forbid that we have lessons that actually have application to some people who are sitting here, you know. Let's preach about the people who are outside the building. Let's preach about things that people don't need to hear who are here. Right? Does that make sense to you? So, come and talk to me about my problems. That's my problem. Don't come and talk to me about somebody else's problem. And it's tough. It takes spiritually minded people to say, "Restore. Restore me." It takes spiritually minded people to say, "I want to be involved in restoring you." It takes a spiritually minded person to say, to be wise enough to say, "Considering yourself, lest you be tempted." I'm just telling you that there are not, that restoring all people is not for all people. I'm just going to tell you that if there's some woman that's struggling with some problem, then I'm not going to talk to you all by myself. You know, hey, talk to my wife, and or get me and my wife involved, or a couple women are going to go, and spiritually minded women are going to come and help you with your problem. If a person has a problem with alcohol and he sees a brother going to a bar, that brother needs to get somebody who doesn't have a problem with alcohol to go and help this other brother. That's not the general wisdom of the world these days. The wisdom of the world basically says if you had a problem with something, help somebody who does have a problem with it. And whereas you can bring something, if you've overcome something, you can bring something to the table, but you need to consider yourself lest you be tempted. need to be very careful. But as challenging as this can be, you remember how this story ends. Do not grow weary in doing good. As challenging as restoring other people is, this is one of those good things. Restoring somebody is a good thing that we need to do even though it's difficult. Look at the next verse. Bear one another's burdens, verse 2 of chapter 6. And so fulfill the law of Christ. Well, why would that be a challenging thing? Well, because I have enough of my own problems. I'm busy and you know, my resources, you know, are stretched thin, and bearing other people's burdens, tough. It's tough sometimes. I'm not complaining. But I'm saying that's why it becomes difficult for us to do that sometimes, and why he's going to have to say about bearing one another's burdens, he's going to have to say, don't grow weary in doing good. Because we do get weary of bearing people's burdens. How come I always have to be the strong one? How come I'm always the one that has to bear the stress and answer the questions and do all these things? That's because the Lord has challenged us to bear one another's burdens. And no, there shouldn't just be burden bearers and burdeners, okay? In fact, I think I wrote an article some years ago where instead of saying do not grow weary in doing good, I entitled it Wearying Well-Doers. I think that's why he's going to say in verse 5, for each one shall bear his own load. I think that's why he's going to say that in verse 5, is he's going to say, listen, you know, you can't take what's your responsibility and just throw it on other people. And that's, and that overburdens people who are doing what is good. You have to do what you can do. And when you can do what you can do, people are happy to help bear your burden. If you're just taking advantage of them, if we're just being sponges that are just always taking, he says this is a problem. You can give. You have some strength, some things that you can do, some things that you know. We had a woman who was shut in for a decade, maybe. And she was the biggest card sender that you could ever have known. If you saved them, you had shoe boxes full saying, I appreciate what you do, happy birthday, sorry you're sick, happy anniversary, hey, congratulations on your baby. Her husband shopped at garage sales buying every imaginable kind of card that you can imagine for every season, and they just mailed them out by the handful. She helped bear some burdens that when she died, we felt a void. We think we can't do anything, you know, because I'm just a woman. Or I can't do anything because I'm old. Or because I'm young. Because I have children. I'm very busy. And if we'll step back and look, there are some burdens that we can help bear. If we do not grow weary in doing what is good. Sometimes the things that weary us are actually not good things. And they don't accomplish a lot in the spiritual world. And we're super tired. I'm not saying we're not tired. I'm not saying we're not busy. But sometimes the things that have wearied us are not the things that are good. I worked in a summer camp, and we always have tug of war, and some fascinating lessons from tug of war. It's just always, and the staff don't participate, so watching the kids is just fascinating. One thing that we always noticed is the next day, we had morning devo, and everybody could hardly sing from screaming at the tug of war. And wore our voices out, you know, yelling. And the staff too, because the staff, we're all screaming for our sides to pull, you know, all that kind of stuff. Great times. But the devo before the tug of war, that night. So we had a devo before. I was happened to be speaking, and I said, wouldn't it be great if we wore out our voices singing so loud, singing to God so much that when we got to the tug of war field, our voices were hoarse. We couldn't yell for tug of war. That we grew weary from doing what is good rather than we weren't worn out from doing something that was not good. Or that wasn't bad, but it was just something of the world. So let's not weary ourselves so much with the world that we, for example, can't bear one another's burdens. I just don't have enough time. I just don't have enough resources. I just don't have, because they're all committed to something else. I've worn myself out, and now I can't do something spiritual. Read on to verse 3. For if anyone thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. Be humble. Being humble is doing a good thing. And actually, we put it into play. We put it into everyday life where we are serving one another, helping one another, actually in dirty job kind of things. I used to like the show Dirty Jobs when it was on. It's fascinating to me how things work and how different people work and do jobs anyway. But here was a guy. What was fascinating to me was here was a guy who was fairly well known, evidently fairly well paid, willing to do awful, horrible, dirty, smelly, messy jobs. Pretty humble guy. And there were lots of people that would have been well known on TV or in the films that would have never touched that, who would have never helped lift that. I think he milked a camel. Okay, who would do that, you know? And I'm just thinking, you know, we're supposed to be the kind of people who are doing good, even if it takes humbling ourselves, doing the dirty jobs, being the one who always has to do the dirty jobs, or behind the scene kind of jobs, not the people who are standing up here, not the people who even are known to have participated. But it couldn't have happened had you not. No one pats you on the back. And he says, do not grow weary in doing good. God knows. What you did is a good thing. What happened was a good thing. Whether we get complimented and get a thank you note in the mail, or whether we stand up and say, we couldn't have done this without you. He says, don't grow weary in doing good. And that involves having to be humble. Having to empty ourselves sometimes. And of course, verse 4 says, but let each one of you examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not another, for each shall bear his own load. Look at yourself. Look at what you're doing. Why would that be something that we have to not grow weary in doing? Because that's what he's going to say. Don't grow weary in doing good. Self-examination is a good thing. Trying to do what I can do, bearing this load of good things, is what I'm supposed to do. It's a good thing. Well, he's saying self-exam is not always easy. In fact, it's not even really seen as a good thing by some people. Because we sometimes see our errors. We see our mistakes. We see our weaknesses. And so lots of pressure is put on us to only look at ourselves from the bright side. Only say we can, never say we can't. Always say we're right and never admit that we're wrong. Never be vulnerable. Never really open up. Be the best. Most successful. And this passage is saying, look at yourself. That's a good self-examination is a good thing. I'm good because I'm part of a good church. Well, he said, but what are you doing? I'm good because my parents. I'm good because my friends. I'm doing good because somebody else is doing good. And he's saying, no, that's not the standard. He's asking us to step back and say, yeah, but have you obeyed the gospel? Are you learning? Are you growing in faith, growing in knowledge, growing in application? So he's saying that can be tough. Don't grow weary in doing what is good. This is a good thing. And certainly he says that we are to share. Specifically in verse 6, he challenges us to share good things with those who teach us. But really this is be the kind of people who don't grow tired of helping, of sharing, of participating. The same thing with, I think that's closely related to verses 7 and 8 when he says, do not be deceived, God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to the flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. This is a challenge for us to step back and take a look and say, is my life about physical things or is my life about spiritual things? The physical things, the flesh, may be sinful things and the spirit may be right things. But I think really what he's getting at the most is that the flesh things are just physical things. There are a lot of physical things that aren't wrong, but if they become our focus, well, then we're sowing to the flesh. So if my life is all about school, if my life is all about work, if my life is all about my car, if my life is all about my house or all about how people view me, I'm sowing to the flesh. He's saying, and listen, you're going to reap corruption. And what that basically, I believe, means is that in the end, it's all going to be lost, right? It all corrupts. So if you're just planting to stuff that dies, then that's all you're going to get from life is stuff that just dies and corrupts. But if you sow to the Spirit, if it's all about spiritual things and the things of the Spirit and the things of God, he says, well, then what do you get? You get spiritual stuff that doesn't die, everlasting life. And that's a huge challenge. We can grow weary in doing good. We can grow weary in sowing to the Spirit. Because the world is just screaming at us that physical stuff is more important than spiritual stuff. And we can grow weary in that. And we can give in to temptation that all the physical stuff is the most important thing. We can start to teach our children that physical things, being successful in this life and getting ahead and getting lots of stuff is the most important thing. And we can get blind to the fact that we're not sowing to the Spirit. He says, don't grow weary. Don't get tired of that. Don't lose sight of sowing to the Spirit. Because that's a good thing. And he says in verse 10, and as we have opportunity, we're going to do good to all. It's almost like he takes a marker and he just draws a big circle and he says, let us do good to everyone. Every situation, every person, we are going to be challenged no matter how difficult it is. We are going to do good to all. We're going to make the commitment that we're not going to grow weary while doing good. That we know something that the world doesn't know. And that is, in due season, we will reap if we do not lose heart. There are disheartening things that are happening in the world today. Disheartening things are happening among even faithful churches. And we can get disheartened. We can get discouraged. And God says, just keep doing what's good to all. You're doing good. You're doing the right things. You're not necessarily making any mistakes. We don't need to change everything all up, and other churches maybe have tried to entice people with various different things that they're teaching that they shouldn't or not teaching that they should be teaching. There's okay, the physical, fleshly enticements and all kinds of things. God says, you just do what's good. Don't grow weary in it. I'm telling you, you're going to reap if you do not lose heart. If you're a person that's lost heart, it's really good news. You can repent of that. You can come back to Christ. If you're a person that has not made it your goal in life to do good, to serve your Lord, no matter what the cost, then you have a chance to do that right now. Confess Him, turn from the world, turn from your old man, and obey Him. Listen, if we can help you do that, why don't you tell us that's what you want while we stand and sing this song.